ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you mind if I give you some feedback? Oh, how did you feel just then when you heard those words? And then when you actually receive the feedback, does this reaction happen in your head?
You're thinking you are wrong.
Defensive anyone? Or perhaps your mind goes racing here.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to get fired. They think I'm such an idiot. I can't do it as well as everyone else can.
Don't worry, we've got you covered. Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Have no fear, in this episode, feedback strategies. What's your approach for giving or receiving feedback? Would love you to share your tips and then we'll share them with other This Working Lifers. Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au or you can let us know via my LinkedIn post. Rushing McCann is a facilitator. She worked with organisations to build leadership capacity and then she develops a better culture of feedback and strategic communication. She's worked in lots of sectors, including health, and for a long time she worked at the ABC giving feedback to reporters and presenters and training others in how to give feedback. And, of course, she's given feedback to me as well. Rush, hello.
Hello, Lisa. Lovely to speak to you again.
And any feedback so far on how this episode's going?
Well, as always with This Working Life, you've picked a topic that everyone will have an opinion on and have experience with, so great choice of topic. But you know that I would turn this round and say, well, what do you think's working well already, Lisa?
I knew. And so what we're going to do is we're going to keep that for later. Rosh, why do we give feedback at work?
So that people feel noticed and valued is one of the key things that I would say. And building capacity, helping people to improve, which means that they develop skills, which ultimately means that work performance improves, productivity improves, and overall, people feel better about being at work. And we know that at a time where it's difficult to recruit people, it's difficult to retain people, it's difficult for people to be engaged at work, that the more people are being told that they are valued and seeing ways that they can improve in the workforce, the more that they're going to be engaged with your company or with your organisation. But it needs to be relevant, timely and specific and needs to be done in a trustworthy way.
And Rosh, that all sounds really positive. I wonder why it's getting such a bad rap though, so we must be doing something wrong. Let's start though with an example of feedback done well, please.
Well, I think that's the thing, that so often when we talk about feedback, it's immediately around being defensive or being frightened or, you know, I'm such an idiot, even some of the things you were saying at the beginning. In general, I think that when feedback's done well, you're guiding people to their own insight and most importantly, letting them recognise and celebrate what it is that they've done well, because otherwise, how on earth can they do it again? And so if the only time feedback is given is when something has not worked or has gone badly, then of course people are going to have that fight or flight response. But the coaching approach is the one that I would say works best, where you are treating adults as adults, where they are feeling internally motivated and self-directed, where they know that they're respected, that their life experience is being respected, and you guide them to have their own insight. And so I'm very much one for frequent feedback and a coaching approach, a strengths-based coaching approach being used.
And just with the coaching approach, can you give us a specific example of how that plays out, just so we can get a handle on that?
Sure. So it would be something like a manager sitting down with someone and saying, you know, what worked well about the event that you just put on, and the person goes through, you know, some of the things that works, and then you say anything else that's worked really well, and they would talk about that too. And then when you're asking them anything you do differently, they may not see something and then say, what did you notice about the way people didn't engage in that right-hand side of the room? And the person goes, oh, yeah, you're right, such and such and blah, blah, blah happened. So you're actually not saying straight out, I noticed that everyone in that right-hand side room was disengaged. You're hoping that they're going to come to that insight. If they don't, you can say, I noticed, but it's actually them getting that aha moment is the big thing that makes a difference with the the learning sticking and actually changing behaviour into the future, because it needs to be future focused. You can't do anything about what you've just done.
And how would you distinguish that from our age-old sandwich approach that people don't tend to like?
Are you talking about that SHIT sandwich?
Yes.
Totally disagree with it. And I know that, because what's the point of that? You know, I say something positive, I'll say something bad, and then I'll say something nice at the end. Because all that happens is that naturally people are going, there's the nice thing, and now we're going to talk, wait for the bad thing to come. Oh, and now they're just going to try and make me feel good as I walk away. People can see through all of that. It's not surprising that it's got the SHIT word attached to it, because very often it feels like BS to people when they're doing it. The approach that I was taught by actually someone within the ABC is very much more around the guiding to insight and looking at it, not even necessarily from a positive lens, but from a strengths-based lens, which is very different to that sort of toxic, inauthentic positivity.
And what's an example of feedback done badly? And I believe you might have one from the beginning of your career.
Bless me, Lisa, for I have sinned. It was a very long time ago, I'd like to say. I was working in publishing, was promoted to national sales manager at Random House, and was promoted up from within the sales team. You know, that weird sort of thing where you've been at a level with people and then you're promoted up. Very excited about the job, very enthusiastic, out on the first day with one of our sales reps who was very experienced, spent the day watching the way he worked with bookshops, and at the end of the day said to him, that was great, well done, and ticked on the sheet that they had for giving feedback that was set up at that stage, which was a numerical system, so it was out of 10, and I gave him marks out of 10 for each of the elements of his role, handed it over. Get a call that night from somebody else going, what have you done to blah, blah? He's devastated. I, Lisa, don't think anything is 10 out of 10 or perfect. In fact, 9 out of 10 is something that I find hard to get to. That person was marked out of 8. I never bothered to tell him that that was my process. I never bothered to have the conversation about what he had got previously. I didn't look at any context, and it took me 6 months to win his trust back. Even though I explained, even though I apologised, best learning I've ever had, don't use numerical systems, do have conversations, do establish context.
So many learnings there, Roche.
So many.
And later on, Roche is going to share her tips about giving and receiving feedback, as well as something you can practice outside of work that will help you get better at work. James Donald is a senior lecturer in management and leadership at the University of Sydney. G'day, James.
G'day, Lisa. Great to be here.
James, what does the research tell us about the best way to give and receive feedback?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's been, safe to say, a ton of research on this. And I certainly perhaps would start with the point that Roche has just touched on earlier around the specificity. So there's quite a bit of research showing that when we're not specific about the behaviour and the context and then the impact of that behaviour, people tend to kind of read more into the feedback, and that is almost always in a negative way, and tend to take it personally. And so certainly the work of being specific and being clear and being timely as well seems to really matter.
And there's a feedback approach, in fact, called SBI, Situation Behaviour Impact, that's commonly used. Do you want to talk us through this one?
So there are these three aspects. So starting with the situation and giving some context for the feedback so that the person has a sense of, well, yeah, this is what was going on. This is the context. There's less room for misunderstanding. And then, as I just mentioned, being really quite specific about the behaviour and then the impact of that, obviously from the point of view of yourself. And then from there, you're wanting to kind of fan out to invite feedback on your feedback, if you like. And that's really starting to build in this kind of coaching approach as well that Ross just mentioned, where you're wanting to really invite the other person's input and feedback, particularly as you start to think about, well, what's their perspective on this? And then ideally starting to work towards, okay, so what are some options for how we can move forward here? And that last part, there's a ton of research behind that as well. But in that common sort of manager employee dynamic, whatever levers that you can pull to support and aid the ownership and the autonomy of the recipient of the feedback, there's a lot of research suggesting that that is critical. It's often where the battle's lost and won. I mean, you can be specific and you can be clear about the impact, but if there isn't the opportunity for the other person to have a voice in that and provide some feedback on your feedback, and then also particularly as well, and there's some interesting research around this, to kind of elevate the conversation. Like, you might need to start in the nitty-gritty of what's happened and what I'm noticing and focusing on that, but to elevate the conversation from that specificity to what it is we're trying to do here, that sense of purpose.
James, I did joke at the beginning of the episode about what happens in our brains when we do hear this phrase, "Can I give you some feedback?" What is wrong with framing it this way?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the bottom line is that because we all associate feedback with being in some way corrective, if not critical, it triggers that kind of fight or flight kind of limbic part of the brain's functioning. And so that we tend to kind of just implicitly take that as a negative thing. Whereas focusing on the issue, you know, like Ross used the example of an event, like starting with that and starting to talk about, well, what did we notice was going on there and what were some things that were happening there? So the focusing on a third point can often be quite a nice way of kind of circumnavigating that limbic response rather than opening with, I want to give you some feedback. But sometimes that more direct approach is totally necessary as well. And I think it's easy to forget that the amount of nuance in all of this, like there are so many factors in the environment that determine the kind of feedback that's going to work or not. And one of them, just one of them, is the stakes. If the stakes are really high and there's something really critical, of course you're going to want to jump in there and give some pretty direct feedback and not kind of mince your words too much. But then 90% of the time you don't want to be doing that. You want to be much more empowering.
Ross, how should we then be initiating a conversation about feedback instead?
It's setting up the processes ahead of time. So that, you know, to be walking past someone and say, can I give you some feedback? I can understand why anyone would want to run a mile. but it is that thing to actually set up regular ways of doing it, which can be short, specific, timely, all of those sorts of things, and actually find out for the first time. And again, going back to James's point, if we're talking about a manager to an employee, finding out what their experience of feedback has been previously, because that's actually going to give you a really good insight into what's already worked for them. And then to say what your process is, what you're hoping to achieve from it, and whether or not that sounds good to them, and that the way that you'll be doing it is this. And I think that that stops a lot of the thing that becomes very much about them, and also stops the thing that I find with a lot of managers, they themselves seem to be very concerned about giving feedback and how it reflects on them and whether they do it well. So actually, if you're encouraging someone for it to be a two-way approach, it's going to make it a lot easier. And I want to pick up on James's point as well, that we're talking about feedback here, but that and direction, you know, in the end, sometimes you just have to say, I need this to be done. I need it to be done in this way, or I don't want that to be done and I don't want it to be done in that way. And that's the only way to manage.
That's a really interesting distinction between direction and giving feedback. Do you need to label it so that it's clear?
I think it's some of the nuance that James talked about. But yes, I think sometimes managers have said, you know, and they didn't seem to get it when I was giving them the feedback. And I said, but it's a direction. You are giving them a direction. As a manager, you can say, as your manager, I need you to do this. I need you to do it in that way.
And you did mention the role of the manager there, and often the manager's own psychological approach to this might play a role. What about the thought that sometimes feedback feels more like projection?
It is very important for you as a manager to prepare and to be very clear on your role and your remit and their role and their remit, and that's understood. A lot of the times when I see conflict within a workspace, it's a lack of clarity around roles and requirements and expectations, not that it's a feedback session that has gone badly. It's that lack of clarity that's become the problem.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong. My guests are James Donald, Senior Lecturer at the University of Sydney Business School, and facilitator Roisin McCann. Roisin, let's do a little role play here. So let's say I want to give some feedback to my beautiful producer. Where should I start? And should I let my producer know that I have some feedback, or should I avoid framing it this way?
What do you think, Lisa? I am going to do it. You knew I would do that. What do you think? What works normally for the both of you?
Well, actually, we do have a little approach which we think helps, and that is we call it a retrospective, where we look at the episode and we're both actually looking at the wall together and we look at the categories. So we say, what went well? What would we do differently? What did we learn, and what still puzzles us? And so it feels less like we're giving each other feedback and more that we want the best outcome for our show, so we might be musing about the things that might make it better.
My feedback to you would be that sounds perfect. It's that peer-to-peer review, and it also gives you something to look to into the future. And I know as well, because you can get data on who's listening, you can add some of those facts into some of the review that you do. But essentially, it's that review model and having something else to look at. And the other thing for your program, of course, is you're clear on your role as a presenter, Michelle's clear on her role as a producer. Both of you bring different things to it, which means at different times you're acknowledging different strengths that each of you are bringing to the work. I think that sounds perfect.
And what can we do generally at work to prepare ourselves ahead of time for feedback? Should we just make it a regular occurrence?
I think so. I think the more that you know that this is something that happens, the more that you know the way that it works, the more that you get value out of doing it and you're actually able to apply it. So it means that you have your first feedback session, and then when you have your next feedback session, the very first thing you're going to be looking at together is, what did you apply out of the last time? What have you noticed that's worked out of that? And so you will be building, and at that stage, it's the building capacity. It's helping people to stretch. It's working with their motivation to either be promoted or to be paid more or to be recognised. Whatever their internal motivation is to just do a better job, you will find that people will achieve more in that way.
And Roisin, can you step through your approach for us, please?
So I have to say, it was taught to me by somebody else, so I can't claim it as my approach, but you actually use it. The approach is to ask what's worked well, to ask what might I do differently, if anything? What might you do differently, if anything? And what have you learned? So you ask those questions. And then the easy part about it, or the easier part about it, is that then you, as the person giving feedback, just needs to add to what's already been there. So it's either to agree and amplify what they've said's working, or to add in a couple of other things that you can see that are working. If they identify something that could be done differently, you may also agree or not, and you can also add in something else. And then importantly, the learning is one of the things that I find is the most useful. And sometimes that learning is, after a feedback session, I need to stop being so hard on myself, or I need to really try and get over this imposter syndrome, because actually I did a good job of that speech or that presentation or that meeting. And so the whole point of it is that it gives the person an ability to give their own insight, and for you then to back that up. It also reduces the time that it takes, because you're not walking in and going, I want to just point out this, and for them to then be defensive and then to get into the details and the minutiae of the defensiveness. In fact, they've already led the conversation.
And it strikes me, Roisin, listening to this approach, that really the difference is, rather than a manager thinking, look, this is about your behaviour and it's all about you, if we see this as a system and actually we're working together for, you know, this great outcome, so to also put yourself in the system as a manager to say, actually, how am I contributing to this, and what could I do to help, and what things could I do better to help you do what you need to do?
We know that people are looking for purpose, and we know that people are looking for meaning in their work, and that gives it to both of the people that we're talking about. And you can also do it in a group sense. You can work with a team and do the same thing.
So, James, how does a person's conflict style affect how they give and receive feedback?
There are different conflict resolution styles, ranging from avoiding up kind of one end, if you like, to a more of a smoothing approach. So I'm sure we've all seen or been in moments where we're wanting to kind of de-escalate, smooth over a conflict. Then to the other extreme, if you like, around a more aggressive approach, forcing an issue, competing, forcing to get your view across. And then I suppose another sort of adjacent approach would be not quite aggressive, but certainly being willing to engage assertively / collaborating. And then there's a kind of a compromising style as well. So the idea is that no one of these styles is right or wrong, and that their utility just depends on the context and the needs of the situation. Of course, the hard part is that if we're kind of wired toward one of these in particular, it can be hard for us to pivot. But certainly the idea is that all of them have their role and have their relevance.
Rosh, how does the power imbalance in a relationship impact the feedback interaction then?
I think the key thing around power imbalance is that there needs to be an establishment of trust. And again, it gets back to what James is saying, that you need to have established the relationship and what is there and what the roles are in order to be able to do it. So a manager who only ever sees somebody for a performance review in 1 year, that power imbalance is huge. Direct reports should be getting regular feedback, and then as it goes up the chain, and I kind of hate some of this terminology as well, but we know that that's the reality, then people should only be giving feedback when they know the person and have tried to establish who that person is.
And Rosh, then how can organisations create a culture of feedback and coaching so that people are less afraid of it?
By doing it, by having a system for doing it, by that system and that language being known across the organisation, and for it not to be given sort of, we'll do this for a month, oh, here's a month of feedback, we're going to quickly do this because we've just done the engagement survey. It's that it's constant, it's relevant, it's timely, it's specific, and it actually helps people to grow and to stretch, which ultimately has to be good for any organisation.
Thanks so much, both of you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Rushing McCann is a facilitator who works with organisations to develop a better culture of feedback and strategic communication. And James Donald is a senior lecturer in management and leadership at the University of Sydney Business School. Don't go away yet, because up next, try this. You're going to learn a technique that will make your feedback so much better. It's time for Try This, where we give you tips and hacks to try in your own work and life. Rosh McCann, what are your feedback tips for listeners to try this week, please?
So the best way to become good at feedback is to give it. And so my suggestion is try it everywhere you go. So try it in neutral, non-power places. Try it outside the workplace. So when you're in the shop, instead of saying thanks very much for your help, actually say what that help was. And you'll feel a bit naff when you first start doing it, but the difference that it will make to someone when you do it is amazing. So thanks for your help with that. The way that you found those clothes and really listened to me when I felt so stupid about what they looked like on me really helped me make the decision. And honestly, the difference that you will see will be amazing. So give specific feedback about stuff in neutral situations.
Love that. And what about receiving feedback? What should we try this week?
Well, let's flip it on what we've talked about of, oh, what's it going to mean? What are they going to say? And being defensive. Try to go, what is the gift of this feedback and how can I use it? Presume that the person is giving it to you with good intent.
Thanks so much, Rosh.
Thank you, Lisa.
And here's a tip from leadership coach Sarah on what to do when you experience fear in a feedback session.
I like to, A, tell people, totally normal, you're a human. Secondly, I then teach them regulation. So how can you bring yourself back into your body? And that might sound woo-woo, but it's really practical. So if you can breathe deeply, you can actually reverse some of the fear response in your body. If you breathe out slowly, you teach your body that you're not actually in danger. The second part that's really important is taking action through fear. So we build our confidence by taking action and then showing our brains that we're safe and we can do it. And then we look back and go, wow, I did that. I can then do that again.
Thanks, Sarah. And I don't mind me a bit of woo-woo every now and then. And Melissa works with leaders too. She has this tip on giving feedback.
For years, I've been advocating a model called Feed Forward. I think I saw it first from Marshall Goldsmith. And it's the idea of giving feedback that can be actioned on in the future rather than critiquing the past. So it's got that future lens. So instead of saying, you know, your presentation was a bit flat or long last week, it's like next week the leadership team will be looking for something that's focused, keep it up to 5 minutes and lead with your key messages. So something kind of specific and actionable and forward facing, which makes it far easier for the brain to hear and process and apply.
Feed forward. Love it. Thank you, Melissa. And Lucy is a mindset coach and she says it's common for people to fall into mind traps when receiving feedback.
Catastrophizing, you know, oh my gosh, I'm going to get fired. Mind reading, they think I'm such an idiot. And personalizing, I can't do it as well as everyone else can. And so a quick tip that I would offer your listeners is pay attention to your self-talk, catch those thoughts and consider, is this helpful or just habitual? If need be, it's also perfectly okay to take a beat, pause, and actually ask for a little bit of space or time before you come back on feedback.
Thanks so much, Lucy. So try this advice on feedback and let us know if it helps. You can give us feedback as well. Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app. Tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, love your work. I really do.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.